Welcome to the Been There, Done That podcast with Angela Dunn Cartledge.
Hey there, it's Angela from Been There, Done That. If you're navigating the wild, unpredictable world of grief, I want to invite you to something special. It's called Messy Mornings, and it's our free weekly newsletter filled with real talk, gentle reminders, and support that actually meets you where you are. Each week, I'll send you stories, reflections, healing prompts straight to your inbox. No fluff, no pressure, just the space to release, feel, and heal. You don't have to do this alone. Head over to donethatpodcast.com and sign up for Messy Mornings. It's totally free, and it's made with you in mind. I've been there, and let's walk through this together.
Hey, y'all. This is the Been There, Done That podcast, and I'm your host, Angela Dunn Cartledge, and this is my wonderful friend, Amanda Graham. I can't wait to have this conversation. Amanda has so much knowledge and wisdom to share with us. Thank you for being here, Amanda.
It's an absolute pleasure. I'm really excited about this. Thanks so much.
What would you want to tell us about who you are and why you came to my show to tell your story?
Okay. I mean, I guess the best way to describe who I am in a nutshell is I like doing things the hard way. I like doing things in a disruptive way. And I'm one of those people who's never been invited to the table. You know what I mean? And so I've had to kind of carve my own path. And one of the things that I really value from people is a freshness and an authenticity. Because I think we're really missing that. If we just look around in the world and what's going on, you know, I think the wrong people are getting rewarded. And what really stood out to me about you and the podcast was just how you moved on threads. And you felt warm and inviting. And I was just impressed by you just responding to people, period, not even about the podcast or whatever else. And you were one of the first names when I first joined Threads that stood out to me. And when I saw you mentioned you had, like, you know, that you were maybe looking for people or whatever else, I was like, I have to, because I really value people who are kind and authentic and kick ass. So,
well, that's probably the best compliment anybody's ever given me in my entire life. So we're done talking. Thank you so much, Amanda. Okay. We'll talk later. Your check soon. Okay, yeah, exactly. What I love about meeting people this way is that we can have a conversation that spans a lot of different areas of our lives. And one of the things that I've learned in my own grief journey is that grief doesn't have a pretty box that has a pretty bow on the top and it looks exactly the same for everyone. In your case, we talked initially offline about your career path. And I really love how you framed it just now, that you've never really been invited to the table. You clawed your way into a seat at the table. Tell us how your story has kind of evolved in that way and the pieces that you want us to know. And then we'll kind of explore those areas as we go.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense. I'm one of those people who has had 50,000 jobs. I've tried a million. I worked at a dry cleaner's, then it was McDonald's, and it was a grocery store. Then I worked a couple years later, it was as a dating, like a matchmaker. I've been so many things. And then I ended up in comedy, which was the thing I kind of wanted to do all along. But I didn't have a direct way. I worked in documentaries in the BBC, and the cool kids were on the fourth floor and I was on the fifth floor, and I was always trying to get onto floor four, you know what I mean? And so I kind of confronted BBC comedy at some point going, tell me what to do to show you I'm serious about writing, you know, comedy and doing whatever. And they said, okay, well, run comedy nights, do stand up, you know, just do stand up, right? And I didn't want to do those things. I didn't, but I I look at things very methodically, like, okay, if I need to get here, then I need to break it down into steps, right? Like X, Y, Z. And that's how I do it. So I was like, okay, I guess I'm doing stand-up comedy now and whatever else. And so I did that. And that's how I got my break. Somebody saw me live after I'd been doing it for like a year and a half or something. And they saw me live and then they told their executive producer. And then that's how I got my first break. But I learned very quickly in this industry that there are people, gatekeepers. I mean, I think we all have gatekeepers. Do you know what I mean? Like we all have people who are stopping us wherever we need to go, whether it's because I know you or whatever else. Right. And so, and it's difficult. And I struggle because, I didn't know until a couple of years ago, but I'm autistic. And well, I've been diagnosed as autistic. I have not been diagnosed as ADHD yet, but I am absolutely both of them. Absolutely both of them. And so I didn't realize that I was having struggles in terms of my communication and the way I was doing things, because I just say things straight out, you know what I mean? And I don't mince words, that doesn't mean I'm like a wrecking ball, but it means that I prioritize the truth, and I find it important to be authentic and just say what you mean and mean what you say. And that industry is not the kind of industry that people who just say stuff that's true. And so I made the mistake of clawing to get a seat at the table, when what I should have done, and then I wasted a long time trying to prove my worth over and over again to the same people in the industry. I wait to think of all of the years I wasted, and nothing shifted until I got so frustrated with the way things were done that I went, no, I'm not doing it this way. So it was, it was that whole thing of you have to write a script and then you have to do this and then you have to do this. And I was like, no, I'm not, I'm sick of it. I wrote this script about being in a cult when I was younger. And everybody was like, either this is brilliant or this is weird and we don't know what to do with this. And I just got, it was the first really, like when you make stuff that just is right out of your soul. And I don't mind being rejected or whatever. Like you just get used to it in this industry. It doesn't even bother you anymore. But I think it was because I was like, I am so sick and tired of this stupid way that we have to do things, right? So what I learned then was, once I decided I was going to build my own table, it wasn't even about clawing to get. It was about spending your time finding the people who you belong to, who get who you are in all your weirdness and all your amazingness and all of the things that drive other people crazy about you. Once you spend your time finding them instead of trying to prove yourself over and over again to the people who don't get you in the first place, like I think that was the biggest thing. Now, it's still a pain in the ass, right? Like the book I've written, one of the most frustrating things was I got an agent right away. So I wrote this book, good stuff to read when you're about to lose your shit. Just all the stuff that I had learned over the last 10 years, which was the worst 10 years of my life. And I got an agent right away on the first reading, first agent. They were like, this is brilliant, but you're going to have a problem because you haven't got a big following. And I was like, when am I supposed to do this? I have 5 jobs. I am a single mom. When am I supposed to do it? Like just get 10, 20, 50,000 people. And if I did, why would I need a publisher? Why would I need you? You know what I mean? So
I could do that myself. I can sell my
exactly.
If I had 50,000 people following me.
Exactly. So she said, let me just package it anyways. I'm going to send it out, see what all the big publishing houses and the little publishing houses said. Angela, they said the same thing. Every single one of them was like, this is brilliant. Who is she? This is hilarious. Who is she? This is amazing. Who is she? And they were like, come back when she's got 50,000 followers or 20,000 followers. And I was like, okay, I know from my whole life that things have only worked out when I've told people to saw it off, right? When I've told people I am not doing that way. I am not going to tap dance for gatekeepers and whatever else, because it never works out that way anyways. So I was like, okay, I guess I'm going to do this the hard way as well. And so I've just, decided to punk rock the book and I'm using the quotes from all those main publishing houses on the book. You know, this is brilliant. Who is she? I'm just going to lean into the fact that, right? So, like, it's
good. It.
See, I, you get this, right? Because you've built this from nothing and, like, you've done it from the ground up.
Yeah.
And I think we just get so frustrated because, like, you figure it out on a platform and then they change the algorithm. Or, you save up a little bit of money and then the economy tanks and so you're screwed again. Or it just feels like unless you do it yourself, you're at the mercy of, you know, whatever the whims are of whatever the people are or whatever else. And so it's, for me, the grief side of the of that has been that I grieve the time I have to take to do this.
Or the opposite, the time it took you to get to the point where you were making it happen. Yes. Yes.
Bang. Right. So, but, and I hate that my time has been wasted when there are other people with a lot fewer struggles that just walk into places, you know what I mean? And so I grieve that because I get annoyed that I had to, you know, that it took me 10 years to do one thing, or I get annoyed that I had to do all of these extra hoops and work 80 hours a week. Last year, I was working 6 jobs at the same time, 1 laptop in one hand and 1 in the other. Do you know what I mean? Like, I hate that I've had to do things like that. So it's more grief that the way that things are set up, it makes things so hard for creatives. And we just consume everything they make. And we never think about what they have to put into it and the sacrifices that they have to make. You know what I mean? And underpaid or not paid at all or whatever. So I think my grief is more that.
That's the part that I was going to say is the underpaid or not paid at all part, because there's so much time in there where you're creating, pitching all the pieces, and then, but you're still, there's no money that comes in until somebody agrees, until that thing actually reaches the finish line or actually even reaches the middle point of the race. There's no money coming in. And so it's that concept of I'm on a treadmill in Tennessee trying to reach China, you know, I'm trying to actually run to China, but I'm on a treadmill. And that it makes things a lot harder to get there. But what I hear in your story is other people, I know already that there are people in our audience that are going to say, I resonate with her. Mm-hmm. I see myself in her, and she took a leap. I can too. If she can do this and that, I can too. I see it as more of a more empowerment.
Yeah.
I can absolutely empathize with the fact that you don't see it that way because you're up to here in the weeds. You know, you're still trying to get your head above the weed line, and trying to get that, like you said, your first big break. I love how you worded it that way. It was so hopeful. I was like, that means there's more than one. Yay.
And you know, I love that you said that because, I didn't start until I was late. I did not start my first gig till I was 40 years old. And then I didn't get my first writing gig till years after that. That is geriatric in the TV and film industry. Do you know what I mean? I'm not kidding. It's crazy. So I have to tell anyone listening who's afraid or whatever else, well, first of all, you're going to have to get over the fear, because if you're successful, there will be people who build websites about how much they hate you. Do you know what I mean? So you have got to get over that. There is, I remember watching a Lady Gaga interview where she was talking about, you know, when she was going through her starving artist phase and just putting everything into it. And somebody from her high school started a Facebook page about how she would never make it, right?
Whoa, are they wrong?
I know. And it's like, so you have to figure out a way to get over that and get over yourself, right? That's the first thing.
Do that now so that when you are famous and do that now so that when the Facebook page gets created, you're like, oh yeah, I knew that was going to happen.
The rejection primes you, like it really does. Do you know what I mean? And it does help you focus and it does test you, like, do you really want this? Do you really want this? Because the majority of the time, this is going to suck. It's like training for a marathon. Do you know what I mean? And it is going to suck. And you are going to have blisters and you are going to have, you know, you're going to turn your ankle the wrong way. And by the time you get to the marathon, you're going to feel like the wounded warrior anyways. And you haven't even done the marathon yet. You know what I mean? So, but I always tell people, especially people who think they're too old or it's too late. No, no, no. What we need to do is use that stubbornness that we have to self-sabotage ourselves and make things not right for us or tell us that we don't dissolve. We need to channel that into something positive for us, even if it's just one thing. And we accept the fact that the first thing, unless you're very lucky, the first thing ain't going to work. And the second thing isn't going to work. And the third thing isn't going to work. But you get better and better and better. And you start getting more audacity and you start getting braver and whatever else. And I think what I really think, because I've known, you know, I've been around creators for a long time and I've seen some start and some fail. And I think what it really is that people aren't necessarily willing to do the work. They're not willing to say no to going out to this or doing that, you know, so that they can focus and get better. And that's not their fault. We're in a society that is instant gratification. You know what I mean? You know, you remember what it was like when we had to wait till the next week to watch a TV show? You know, you'd be watching 24 and it would tick down and you'd just be like,
yeah,
like that. And you'd have to wait for the next show, right?
It's that same pain. It's that same pain my kids feel when they say, "Mommy, can you play so-and-so song on the radio?" And I'm like, "No, baby, that's not how it works. The radio plays what the radio plays. We can't do that on demand." How is it possible? Why not? Well,
so I don't blame them, you know, because they just don't have any concept of it. Right. And I know that some people do go, "Well, I've got 5 kids and I'm running this and where am I going to find the time and whatever else?" To which I go, literally 20 minutes a day, 20 minutes a day, 10 minutes a day over a year, you know, could be a book, could be, or whatever it is.
A screenplay, a script, a whatever the thing is that you, it could, I mean, 20 minutes a day, you could have a whole bunch of podcast episodes, just saying. There's a lot to that concept, but consistency is boring. That's what somebody said that to me yesterday. And I thought, what a fantastic sentence. It's three words. What a fantastic sentence. But it is. And we think we want big, giant leaps forward. We want, and those do happen. But for the rest of the 1,022 days, you have to have 20 minute baby steps. And then on day 1,023, you take 25 baby steps in a row in one day. Yeah. And it feels like a giant leap because you've been doing these little 20 minute things. But that is so real, that concept of, if I just do this today, if I do this today, and I keep moving the needle, you have to challenge yourself still, but you just do a little bit more every day.
100%. Yeah. And it's so frustrating because you're so right. It's boring as hell. Yeah. Nobody wants to do that kind of work. Do you know, nobody in their right minds, at least. I mean, I'm not trying to judge here, but even, look, I love writing. You know what I mean? It lights me up from within. I love cracking jokes and figuring that, you know, like, how am I going to word that to get there? I love that. And it feels so good when someone is like, "You're a genius." And it's like, yes. All right.
Thank you. Yes, I do that this whole time.
Yeah. And 90% of the time I am at my laptop and I am either crying or want to cry and go, this is the before story. Do you know what I mean? And then it happened. Then, like, everyone who has had, like, you know, good success, sustainable success, not a flash in the pan thing, but everyone who's had success, they always say the same thing. They go, it happened very slowly. And then it was like, whoosh, boom, 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 boom. So you just have to be ready for it. And all of this crap you had to do ahead of time is getting ready.
It's getting you ready for the Facebook page that says you'll never make it and that you suck. And that, and you will know that it won't matter then when that Facebook page gets created, because you would have had all of this resilience that you've built up to that point.
Yeah.
It's when you have it too fast.
Yeah.
It's not sustainable. You have to be able to build that muscle to be able to go with the flow and to change directions and jump off the track and jump back on the track. All those things are important. And that wisdom can come and you're 18 or that wisdom can come and you're 78. Like, I'm not saying it has to be that you have all this life experience or anything. And I don't hear you saying that either. I hear you saying, be ready, because if you're putting in the time, if you're putting in the effort, you will get to a good place. You just have to keep trudging through. You just gotta keep
totally. And you have to know, like, I think one of the things is you have to know why you're doing what you're doing, right? Like, because here's the other thing. And I was just having a conversation today with a friend of mine about how my goals are changing. So I used to have like a one-track mind. Like, I think that's the autistic side of me, right? It's just like, okay, so I have to do this, and that means I have to do all these steps to get there. Okay. But like, my goal was always get an Emmy, I remember the first time I held one. Oh my God, it wasn't mine, but I was just like, this is it. You know, and I was like, I remember that moment holding it going, this is what it's going to feel like when it's yours. You know what I mean? This is what it's going to feel like. And, you know, and writing on a good team for an excellent show and like whatever else. And over the last, since I've been starting to write the book, I've always said I wanted to write comedy for two reasons. One, because I love to laugh and I know other people do too. And two, because I want people to feel like they're not alone. Right? That is so important as someone who has felt very, very alone in a lot of times in her life. I know exactly how that feels. And I know what it's like the moment that you realize somebody understands what you're going through. And that's why I wanted to write it. And so over the past couple of years, but especially over the last couple of weeks, my brain has gone, wait a minute, you know, you've got goals, cool, not giving up on the dream, still doing all that stuff. But I have found my life to be much richer when I've been open to the reason why I wanted the Emmy versus getting the Emmy. And so I think what we have to do when we pick what it is, the thing that we know that we want to do, right? The thing that that makes us come alive when we do it, the thing that if we won the lottery, we would still do it, right? I think we have to really pare it back to going, okay, so really what I want to do, the Emmy is for an ego thing. The Emmy is because I want to be the best. And that's because I want to be so good and so skilled that I'm undeniable. But really, if I stay open to the fact that, no, what I really want in my day-to-day life with my friends and people who I meet when I'm out, I want to make them laugh. I want to make them laugh because this life is hard. This life is hard, and we need people who we need to be there for each other. You know what I mean? And that, and what that comes down to is building community and letting people know I care about you. I might not know you, but I care. And so then when I realized that, my brain went open to like other things that I wouldn't have considered before. You know what I mean? And that has been another way that my life is, like, I'm getting real close to the whoosh, but in ways that I didn't know that I would. So I just want to make sure your audience knows that it's totally cool to go for your goal. It's totally cool to just work and work and work and work. And that is absolutely fine. And if your soul is singing during that whole thing, that's super cool. But be open to why you're doing it and what you want to get out of it, because life surprises you and it knocks you for six. And you end up here, unless you're very lucky, or maybe you're unlucky, but you know, you end up in the place that you always expected to go with your 5-year plan or your 15-year plan or whatever else. I can't conceive of that at all. And the older I get, the more I realize that if I plan, that phrase, you know, that when you plan, God laughs or whatever it is, you know, like, oh my God, I don't know, Angela, if you feel the same way, but it's just like, life just goes, I think not. I do. You know, you're going to end up over there. Hey, we're going to throw you over there.
I actually think that there's beauty in that evolution, if you're willing to see it, obviously. I mean, there's so much of what happens to us that we can say, this is somebody else's fault. This is not something that I did. And that may honestly be true. But at a certain point, we have to take responsibility for what we can do. We can shift our perspective, to your point. We can say, well, yeah, that was the original plan, but I'm going to go over here and do this for a minute, and I'm going to see what that turns out. You don't know. You could get an Emmy for when the book becomes a TV show.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, that's it. Yes.
It goes in its own path. You know, you can't choose.
That is it.
Yeah.
That is it. I keep telling other writers, I'm like, write the book. I know it's a pain in the butt, right, to write a novel or whatever else, but write the book and then they'll come for you because they only care about IP and you know, existing stuff. Well, so then you never know. You could meet, you know, like I'm working on a children's book. Like, you know, one of the things was I didn't see doing a children's book, but then I had written a story when I was 12. And then it popped in my head last year. It popped in my head like in the summer. And I was like, oh, I don't know. Completely. And then I met an animator from Disney by accident, who is one of the greatest people I've ever met in my entire life. Honestly, every time I talk to him, it's like 2.5 hours. I love this man. His name is Travis Blaze. He's amazing. And I remember just being like, okay, like, well, if I'm supposed to write this this book, then I need an illustrator. So if I get the illustrator, then I'll write the book. If not, then I won't write the book, right? So anyways, on a completely unrelated thing, he's not in the, he's been animating for 30 years. He's done everything in Disney. Like, he's just done everything. Anyway, and we started talking before Christmas about New Year's resolutions. And he goes, you know, my New Year's resolution is to illustrate a children's book. I've always wanted to illustrate a children's book. And I was like, I'm sorry, but I'm going to swear again. But I was like, you can get the fuck out of here. And he was like, no, seriously. So then when we talked about, when I told him the story, he wrote he drew a still from the story as I spent 15 minutes explaining the story. Yeah. Yeah. And so now we've got this, we've got publishers asking for the draft. We've got children's book agents asking for the draft. And now we're all like, do we need that? Or now we've got angel investors who love the project. You know what I mean? And if I hadn't been open, it is about a goldfish that is lonely. And, you know, she lives in the woods. She lives in a bowl in the woods and she doesn't know how she got there. But, you know, it's just this whole gorgeous story about loneliness and how you can survive, you know, what the things that we do to escape loneliness. But when we're stuck in that place for a while, that need that we have to feel that one day we're going to get out of there. Do you know what I mean? And I wrote it when I was 12.
Hope that it, that comes with that. That's the only thing that moves us through. And that's what I, all right. I'm really excited about that book.
I am very excited.
I bet you are. Let's talk about the, I'm calling it your memoir, but it's more than that, but talk us through that process.
So I know that maybe you, but also your audience, and so we'll probably relate to this, but I really, really struggled the last 10 years of my life, like really struggled. I've had and considering that I was in a cult and all of my back, it's saying something that the last 10 years have been so difficult. I mean, you know, I had to live on carrots and potatoes. I had to shoplift my son's birthday cake one year because I was so poor. I work in the winter with completely covered in clothes. When it's so cold, I go to the gym, right? Cause like, I'll just grab a table there. Like, and one of the things I learned going through this kind of phase, which I always call the wilderness time in your life, not everybody goes through it, but a lot of us do, especially those of us who've got tons of like childhood crap and trauma to unpack, right? Like, it's got to come out eventually or you're screwed for the rest of your life. So you go through this really horrible phase that your life just throws you in when you least expect it. Anyway, so I read like tons. I mean, this is not even all the books. Most of my books are in storage, but like I read tons of self-help books and they were all really good. But one thing that they were wrong about was when you're in crisis, you do not have the energy to read 40 pages or 60 pages of a chapter and then do workbook stuff. It's just, I'm sorry. It's just not going to happen. You know, like there were some times where I would be crying so badly that I was like wheezing and then I would open this book and it'd be like, oh, we have a 30-minute exercise. It's not how crisis works. So what I wanted to do with the book was meet you where you were at that particular moment, whether you had a sentence in you, whether you had a paragraph in you, whether you wanted a story, an activity, whatever. So, and because I was, you know, I've had research jobs my whole life. And when I did documentaries, I was a documentary researcher. So you have to read a lot to distill things. So I kind of, and then because I was a stand-up as well, I kind of put a dark tint on everything, like quite, you know, a lot of jokes and comedy in it and stuff, but on the dark side. I'm sure, no doubt it will be misunderstood by some people, but I know that I need, sometimes you just need somebody who just reads you a story in bed, like you're sick when you're 9 years old or whatever else, and then sometimes you need a best friend who just slaps you upside the head and goes, would you stop being such a dick about things? So it's, and so then I put it into different chapters, like idiots, money and work, assholes, love and broken hearts, grief. And then I'm still kind of tempted. I've written a chapter on human nature that doesn't really fit into any of the other stuff. But the point is this, like, so if you're having a really ugly cry day, you could just be like, oh God. And you just finger it to like whatever the, you know, chapter is of the thing that's bothering you the most. And then whatever energy you need, you've got it. So, I don't mess about, like I said, I am straight up with the shit that I talk about. And I think it just, I'm writing the book that I wish I had had. Going through that 10 years.
Hey there. It's Angela from Been There, Done That. If you're navigating the wild, unpredictable world of grief, I want to invite you to something special. It's called Messy Mornings, and it's our free weekly newsletter filled with real talk, gentle reminders, and support that actually meets you where you are. Each week, I'll send you stories, reflections, healing prompts straight to your inbox. No fluff, no pressure, just the space to release, feel, and heal. You don't have to do this alone. Head over to donethatpodcast.com and sign up for Messy Mornings. It's totally free, and it's made with you in mind. I've been there, and let's walk through this together.
I feel when I hear it is that it is an acute situation. You called it crisis, and I tend to call it acute, but I think we're saying the same word, that we are, that when we're in it all the way up to our eyeballs in water, and we're just, you know, like a goldfish, see, we're, our head is tipped all the way back and our little lips are out of the water just enough to get air. That's all we can do sometimes. We still have to know how to tread water, and we don't know how to do that necessarily. In those moments when we are used up and so spent that we can't see ourselves out of the fishbowl or out of whatever the situation is that we're in, that's when we need a different perspective. And so what I hear you describing about the book is that it's not just about relieving our own loneliness or our own isolation in our crisis, but also giving us a way out. It's giving us hope in whatever that looks like, in humor, in raw data, this is what worked for me, advice, you know. And if only one person hears this episode and resonates with the story of either book or both books, and does something about it and makes a change to their lives, we may never see that, but we at least, that's why we're here, is because that possibility is out there.
100%. And you know, I it's so funny because I remember actually one of the consistent feedback that a couple of the publishers and stuff had given to my agent was, well, what's her area of expertise? And I was like, well, my area of expertise is not losing my shit despite just extraordinary circumstances.
I have lived. That is my, gone through that? My resume says I am alive. That is my,
I don't know how I honestly don't know how. I was tallying up Same. My 14 last, the now it's so ironic because I thought I was coming out of it, right? But life was like, nah. But my last 14 months, my dad got ill again. My sister had two strokes. I lost my Nana. I lost my job. I lost my friend Martin. And then I lost my best friend in 14 months. So my point is this, right? If I can keep it, and that was just 14 months, not the 10 years. So it's like, if I can keep it together as a single mom, autistic, ADHD, you know what I mean? Chronically fighting during the worst time in our lives in terms of thriving and trying to not deal with anxiety and whatever. If I can do it, anyone can do it. Anyone can do it. So, and that's, you know, that bottom of the barrel, rock bottom feeling is that, you know, I don't think people can write books if they haven't truly experienced what we know to be a rock bottom, not what they know to be a rock bottom, which is like 6 months where things aren't going well. Do you know what I mean? Like, no.
Yeah.
So, you know, it has to be something where you don't see a way out and you don't know what you're going to do. And whether you pray or whether you meditate or like whatever it is that you do, there is nothing but silence coming back. Do you know what I mean? Like those real moments where you feel alone. Like I just feel like such a burden for people because it is the most exhausting, disheartening place to be. And we lose a lot of people, you know, who are in that place. And so for me, I feel like we really have to stick together, and we forget, or we're scared of the power that we can have if we just look after each other. And if we advocate for each other in small ways or big ways, you know, I think we're terrified of our power because we've never been given access to it, you know, and so I just wanted to, I thought it was important to make people feel seen. I don't know if they're going to, like, I have no idea. You know what I mean?
Like, because that's your intention. So that's what you're putting it out into the world to do.
Yeah.
So it will do that. And I don't have 50,000 followers either. But that, what I hear is the hope that you have, that you, that your determination, your grit, your inability to give up is fed by hope. No matter how much junk and regret or whatever, you don't give up because you are hopeful, because you see the good still. And that is what I want to focus on as we close, is that you're, even if you feel like your light, Amanda, and the audience, if you feel like your light is under a very heavy cover of leaves and dirt and whatever, the fact that you can still see it is critical to you being able to move forward and to move out of the darkness. So if you had to leave us with a parting shot on what we could do today to make a baby step forward in our goals, what would you say?
First, figure out why you want to do it. And then it really, like, instead of overwhelming ourselves with, oh my God, that goal is so far over there, right? Because that's not the way we meet our goals. That's not the way anybody successful has met their goals. You know, first of all, I would read biographies of people who you like to see exactly how many steps it takes them and where they got their mistakes from and whatever else. Because, you know, it takes a decade to be an overnight sensation. It really does. And but it's that whole thing of you only have to go, okay, so I want to be, you know, an amazing podcaster, you know, has this brilliant podcast, whatever else. Okay, so the first thing I need to do is, you know, identify my audience. Then I need to figure out how to appeal to them, but I still want to be authentic or whatever. And it's literally just those little moments that you have to do. So if you can only handle 10 minutes a day for the first year. Okay, fine, whatever. You know what I mean? It's cool. But just do something and don't think that just because you've only got 10 minutes a day, you can't make a difference. Because we always negate ourselves by going, I got 24 hours a day. What is 10 minutes going to do? But I remember, is it 80-20? I can't remember which book it was, but it was talking about how, you know, when they steer a massive ship, like a huge cargo ship or whatever, they don't steer it 20 degrees to make it turn left. They have to do it hours ahead of time. You know what I mean? And it's like a 1% thing, so that in 24 hours time, the boat is finally going where it needs to go. So that 1% thing, like, just try it, you know, for 3 months or 6 months or a year and see how it goes. It's not a huge investment if we're only talking 10 minutes or whatever else, but your dreams are too important to not follow. And, you know, I put this in the book, but, you know, one of the biggest 5 regrets of people on their deathbeds is that I wish I had gone for the things that I really wanted in life instead of settling. So don't settle. Life is so short. You know what I mean? Like, it's so important to give yourself one thing that's just yours, that makes your heart sing.
Do it for you. I love it.
Yes.
Love it. Tell us how we can find Amanda Graham in the world and how we can work with you, how we can find your books. Please tell me there's comedy stand up somewhere that
if you want to see Amanda Graham, just buy some, you know, potato chips or something, like French fries. I'll show up anyways, right? So I'm there. So nachos, I'm there. So that's the first thing you can do. And then you can, my website is, and this creates hilarious conversations, but it's www.itsamandagraham.com. So when I say, I mean, ITSAMANDA. GRAHAM. I usually have a who's on first conversation with people. So, I do tons of public speaking. So like, I specialize in like networking and stuff. I write comedy, I do script editing, and, I have a very special place in my heart for, people with disabilities, as I am disabled. It's not because I'm disabled. I just always have, that's been one of my things. I'm very, So if you've got, you know, anyone who has a thing, a need when it comes to inclusion and voices that we don't hear a lot, like, that's always been my ride, right? Like, I love that stuff. So, but especially disabled people. So, because they're just getting such a crap deal right now, but aren't we all? So anyway, but the point
is, there's a lot right now. There's a lot. That's a whole nother, at least hour that we could talk really about is. Just by that.
But I can't, like, I'm on Threads, I'm on LinkedIn, I'm on Facebook.
So we will make sure that we have all the links in our show notes and ways that that people can get in touch with you, because I think your honesty and your ability to make us laugh in the pain is important. And I'm so thankful for the ability to have this conversation with you. Thank you for being willing and open. Thank you for reaching out to me in the first place. This is such a beautiful thing.
Thank you for being so awesome in the first place. I wouldn't have done it if you hadn't been so cool with so many people, you know what I mean, on Threads. It's just been, it was a joy to reach out to you. And I was so excited when you were like, yeah, let's do it. I was just like, oh my God, this is amazing. So yeah, thank you.
Thank you. And I can't be more grateful. I think our audience is going to learn so much from this episode, and definitely from the things that you put into the world outside of this episode. So thank you so much for being here.
Same to you. Thank you very much.